This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on motoring law. This is part two of our motoring law podcast, so please do listen to our part one. I am joined by barrister Jeremy Rosenberg from 23 Essex Street Chambers in London. Jeremy is regularly instructed in serious and complex legal matters, and he has particular experience of dealing with motoring issues. He regularly receives instructions relating to all aspects of driving offences, and he was recently commended by a judge as being both persuasive in law while finding a way to connect to the jury, which was both involving and sensitive. Thank you very much for joining me today, Jeremy.
Morning, Hattie. How are you?
I'm very good. It's very good to see you on the other end of my Zoom link.
You too.
Which is now becoming second nature on this lovely sunny day. Hopefully you'll be sunny for our listeners when they get to listen to this part two. So let me just quickly tell our listeners what we discussed in part one of motoring law. So if they want to go back and listen to that, then they can certainly do that. So we talked about, can I still drive if I have more than 12 penalty points on my driving licence? Are the police allowed to stop my vehicle for no reason? What is the legal alcohol limit for drivers? I have been caught using my mobile phone whilst driving. How many points will I get? If I do not stop for an amber traffic light, is it an offence? And I have been caught drink driving. What is the minimum ban? So let's talk about today. We're going to cover two areas of driving and motoring law. The first being for everyday drivers like us, and then we're going to go on to taxi drivers and talk about their area of law as well, which I think will be really helpful. So first question that I want us to discuss, please, Jeremy, is I was not driving the car, but the police officer told me that I had to give a roadside breath test. Was the police officer entitled to ask me to do so?
Simple answer is yes, as long as they reasonably suspect that you had been the person driving the vehicle. That also applies for a case, what we call in charge cases, which is where they suspect that you were about to drive the vehicle. So they can ask you to provide an alcohol specimen, and if you don't, that can be a criminal offence in itself, refusing to supply a breath specimen.
So yes, and I think that's an interesting point, isn't it? All the officer has to think or believe genuinely is you may have been driving that car, or you may be about to drive that car, even if you're sitting in a passenger seat at that point.
Yes.
Good. Okay, well, that's crystal clear in my mind. So let's talk about drink driving convictions. How long does a drink driving conviction stay on a driving license? And I think let's take the most extreme version, I think, Jeremy, because we were saying, weren't we, before we pressed record on this podcast, that it's very unique to each situation and each case.
Well, this is a particularly complicated area of law because you have, when you are convicted of drink driving, you obviously have a criminal record which the courts are able to see. And if you're checked by the DBS system, depending on what level, it might be viewable there. So that's where people can check your criminal record. But there is also the DVLA, and they have a computer database that records your driving license, and the word used there is that your driving license endorsements. So for most driving offences, the endorsement would last for 4 years, and you would, for example, speeding, you'd receive 3 penalty points in most cases. The endorsement would be on your DVLA record for 4 years. Most insurance companies and the law, it seems, requires you to provide information about that up to 5 years after you've received it.
I have to say, Jeremy, I thought it was 6 years. I thought that speeding convictions on a driving licence actually stayed on your licence for 6 years. Has that changed? Or has it always been 4 years?
The endorsement's always been 4 years.
Right. Okay. There you go. There's a little myth that I heard, obviously, and I just assumed.
Well, and it starts to get very complicated because there's, on the government website, there's advice that if you've got an endorsement, that you have to notify, for example, if you're seeking insurance or doing anything involving driving, that you've got a conviction for speeding up to 5 years after the conviction. However, there was a case called Power and Provincial Insurance where someone was charged with a fraud offence of giving false information because they didn't notify of their conviction. And it was held in that case that in fact they hadn't breached any rules by not providing the details. And in that specific case, which is where it gets again more complicated, because the question was originally about drink driving, because drink driving and causing death by careless driving whilst intoxicated through drink or drugs, in fact, has an endorsement period of 11 years. And then it becomes a very complicated picture, because there's also the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, which is all about spent convictions, when you don't have to notify someone that you have a conviction. So, for example, under the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, if you've got a fine, from the time that the fine is given to you, so the date of your conviction, you have to notify for a period of a year. Once that period of a year has elapsed, you are no longer...
Notify the insurers, we're saying.
Well, no, so the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act is your criminal record. So that is notifying anybody, employers...
Ah, of your actual criminal record, you say, from record. A year of the... But the criminal record stays with you forever, doesn't it?
Well, again, complicated. So you have, in the criminal courts, access by the courts and the prosecution, they will have access to your records for all eternity. So whether you've picked up a caution as a 15-year-old or whether it's recent, they will be able to see everything, in theory, as long as it's recorded properly by the people, such as police officers, who actually enter onto the record correctly. But if you're applying for a job or you're doing some sort of insurance renewal or mortgage application, these kinds of things, they often ask for...
Or bank account, or opening a bank account, yeah.
They often ask for information about whether or not you've got a conviction. Now, you're not under a requirement to give details of a spent conviction.
Was that the case that you were referring to just there earlier?
Yes, so that case itself was dealing with the issue. This person, in that particular case, the case of Power and Provincial Insurance, that was a case where someone had not notified an insurer that they had a drink drive conviction.
That had been spent. That had basically finished, come to an end, is what we're saying.
Where it had long been spent because he received a fine, but there's another system of endorsement, which is when you get on your driving record an endorsement. So the DVLA hold a separate record of your driving offences, because many driving...
The penalty points, they're the points that go onto your licence. That's what we're talking
about. Yes, but even if the penalty points live for normally a 3-year period is the important period, because that's to do with the totting up principle, which we talked about last time.
Yes.
And so they can only take account of points given within a 3-year period from the date that you are being dealt with for your new offence. But an endorsement, is something slightly different. The endorsement is the record that the DVLA hold. So once your 4 years is up, the endorsement should then be removed from your DVLA record. And in certain offences, such as drink driving, it stays on your record for 11 years.
Right, right.
And to complicate the matter even further, there's a more recent authority from 2002 which deals with whether or not it was a breach of your Article 8 rights under the European Convention for an endorsement to stay live long past the period of a spent conviction, because they operate separately.
Yes. And
held that it wasn't a breach of your Article 8 rights, it wasn't a breach of the European Convention on Human Rights, because of all the extra additional complicated caveats that are in all these different pieces of legislation. But what it does is it creates a tapestry of a very complicated situation. And even there's a authority, Wilkinson on Driving Offences, which is the lead authority book that details for most practitioners what is and isn't the law within driving matters for the courts. And even there, it noted that if you go onto the government website, it still tells you that you must notify up to five years of an endorsement. And it says there's a lacuna there.
You must notify, and let's just be absolutely clear here, you must notify everybody that asks you. You're talking about banks, employers.
No, so this is...
Because I'm lost now. I'll tell you that much. The question was, how long does a drink driving conviction stay on my licence? So we've already said it could stay up to 11 years from the date of conviction.
Yeah, so the simple answer is the endorsement remains on your licence for 11 years.
Right.
And so if you're making applications for jobs that require you to disclose your driving record,
yes,
then up to 11 years, you will have to disclose it. So, for example, if you were making an application to be a taxi driver, no doubt they will want to know your driving record.
Yes.
Not just whether you have a spent conviction.
Right, right. Okay. And then we talked about the penalty points and how long they can remain on the license and the fact if they are spent. We briefly touched on the fact that if it's been spent, you still have to give the details. And then there was case law to say that you don't have to give the details if they're spent. That's what we also mentioned. Have I got that right?
Yes, but that's on the different regime of the rehabilitation of offenders on criminal conviction. So
often
when you fill in these forms, they'll ask you for convictions.
Yes.
That operates under the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, and you don't have to disclose once a conviction is spent.
Right. I've got it. I think I've got it.
It's complicated.
Yes, it is. So there's two elements. There's one, what the DVLA do with your licence, and that's what we're talking about when we say endorsement. And then there's the criminal conviction side of things. Obviously, you won't get the points if you haven't been convicted. So the two go hand in hand, but there's a different set of rules for the points on your licence, and I'm just really trying to break this down. And then there's a different set of rules for the criminal conviction side of what's happened, and that record, that's what we're saying.
Yeah, we're almost there, because the points have a third set of rules for the totting up in criminal courts.
Right.
Because that's the importance of the points, is for the use in the criminal courts.
Right.
So that if you reach 12 points, that you can then be disqualified.
Can is the opposite word.
And as we've discussed, there's ways and means of dealing with a totting disqualification. But that is slightly separate to the endorsement, which is a record. So that if someone wanted to look back at what you had done in the past, because they were thinking of giving you a taxi license, for example.
Or something, yeah, or a driver's job or something like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I've got it.
So there is, even the government's own guidance, it still doesn't address the issue of the case of power and provincial insurance, which the textbook Wilkinson has highlighted as a problem.
Okay, all right. Let's get on to our next question. Yes, it sort of does. I think what makes it complicated is that there's different elements that make up the package. So you've got what happens with your driving license in with the points that's connected to the criminal conviction side of things and the criminal record. So that's what complicates it. Whereas, you know, in my mind, I break it down and think, well, how long, if I have the points, then how long should the conviction be? But the conviction is related to the severity of what's happened and in what circumstances. So, yes, I think I get that. But what I will say, that is in part three of this podcast, I think we'd better just tear that up a little bit more and really break it down even more, which will be helpful. So let's move on to our next question. And that is this an offence to use a smartphone as a smartphone on sat nav or music player whilst driving? Now, I have to say, this is a very interesting question because I've certainly done it when my car sat nav has just gone bonkers and I think, oh God, I'll just plug it into the phone and let Google Maps take me there. It's a common thing that people do use their smartphones as sat nav, and certainly, I mean, I use my smartphone to listen to Spotify in my car. I mean, because, you know, Apple CarPlay and all of that's part of that, you know, cars now, and even if it's not, you can just plug it into your wire and you're linked up to your car. Is it an offence to do that?
Whilst you're driving, yes, is the simple answer.
So if you're stopped at the traffic lights, but your car's running, you're in the driver's seat, you're driving the car, but you're stopped at the lights, is it still an offence to go on your phone and quickly change your music or plug in the address?
Yes, there's case law on it that when you're stopped, although the car is still running, if you're stopped in traffic, your car is considered still to be operating and you are considered still to be driving. Now, obviously, again, as everything within criminal law, it's a matter of degree, because if you're stuck on the M1 in stationary traffic for 3 hours and you've switched your engine off and your feet are up on the dashboard in the heat, are you driving your vehicle then? Well, I think most people would accept that you weren't.
Yes, yes.
Even though you're in your car on a public road. But stopping at traffic lights whilst your car is still running is considered on the case.
So I think the key point there is, if you're in your driver's seat and your car is running, no matter where you're stopped, and you pick up your smartphone to put in an address for SatNav or to change the music on Spotify or whatever platform you listen to music on, that is an offence. I think that's the key.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and do you want to get involved in the argument that you were just pulled up on the side of the road, you clearly weren't driving, although the car was running?
Yeah. So the key point there is then pull over, switch off the engine, pull over somewhere safe, obviously. Don't just think, oh, you know what, I'll just block the traffic and so I, for the sake of being able to pull and go, pull over somewhere safe, but switch the engine off. I don't think it's going to work, because I just thought of something actually quite clever. Stop, start. When I stop at the traffic lights, my engine turns off because of the stop, start. But that's still, the car is still running in the sense that it's the engine has not been switched off from the button. I mean, if we're really going to get specific here, that's what we're talking about.
Well, I think because I was thinking exactly the same issue this morning, getting ready for our chat. But I assume on the stop-start technology that the vehicle is still operating.
It is.
The ignition is engaged. It is. It's just the engine has cut out its regular running, but it takes is a slight touch of the pedal. And off you go.
And I'm off. Well, I just take my foot off the brake and then I'm ready to go. That clears that up really nicely. So the moral of the story is, let's not try and be clever and say, oh, if your stop start has kicked in the traffic lights and the police officer's car is next to you, he sees you on your phone, that you can say, well, the engine's not running. It's not about that. The car needs to be switched off from the button or the key, turned off, and you need to be parked up somewhere safe. Then you can pick up your smartphone and do whatever it is to your heart's content, and it will not be an offence. Any other option, it can be considered an offence. Okay, right. Taxi licences. This is an interesting one. We've had lots of listeners ask us to cover these sorts of questions, so let's get straight on to it. Question one. I want to be a taxi driver, but I have penalty points. or I have had. So I have or I have had. I've been disqualified in the past from driving. Can this all still apply?
Okay, I think the question, can I still apply for a license if I've had penalty points or I've been disqualified from driving?
In the past, yes.
In the past sense. Applying for a taxi license, the test is whether or not you're a fit and proper person, and penalty points and previous disqualifications aren't an automatic bar, and every case is different, every circumstance is different, and it's the council ultimately that decide, I say ultimately, in the first instance, the local authority or in London, for example, TfL, make a decision about your license.
You said the council. The council, as in the borough council, will decide whether you get a taxi license in that borough?
No, in London it's TfL.
So outside of London, it could be the council?
Yeah, well, it will, because London's the only part of the country that has a designated transport department.
Transport for London, TfL, yeah, that you mentioned. Yeah,
whereas every other part of the country, their transport departments are run by the local council that operates.
Okay, I didn't know that, Jeremy.
You don't have a transport for Birmingham.
Right, I see. No, I actually didn't know that. So you're saying, yes, you can. If you've been disqualified from driving in the past or you have penalty points, you could still qualify to get a taxi license, is what we're saying.
You could, yes. Obviously, you're less likely to, but it shouldn't dissuade someone from trying.
Right, okay. And when we say you're less likely to, and I'm aware that we're sort of edging towards the end of our time, but is it because perhaps the corporation or the firm or company that you're applying for a taxi license, wanting to work with, or no, actually, it would be the issuers of the license, wouldn't it? Actually, like people prefer people with clean records that haven't been disqualified in the past? Is that generally perhaps the perception?
I think the simple answer is yes, in the way everything, where people are able to see your past and see if you've got criminal convictions, it is something that is going to be a further hurdle for you to overcome.
Yes.
It's not saying you can't overcome it, and every case is on a case-by-case basis. So if you're an individual that's proved themselves since their points or their disqualification that they've done outstanding things as a member of their community, or they have particularly strong character references to support their application, to show that the points or the disqualification was really was an out-of-character blip, as opposed to you being someone that the authority granting the license thinks is your regular character.
I think that's very important to say. You know, if you have had in the past a disqualification or you have had points, and you can say, well, actually, this is what I've done since then. It's been so many years, and this is what I've been involved in, and this is my life now. I like to refer to things sometimes as my past life. You know, that was the past, and I think that would go a long way, and it could certainly go a long way. And I think, and I want to try and wrap up one of the other questions we have at the end of this one. You could appeal if you've been refused an application by the council or TfL. You could always appeal, couldn't you? There's an opportunity
there. That's right. That's why I said their decision is at the first. They don't have the ultimate decision. They're having the decision at first instance. So if they do refuse you to a license, or they disqualify you from holding a license, then you can appeal their decision. You appeal to the magistrates' court, and even that isn't the final appeal process, because everything that goes through the magistrates' court can be appealed to the Crown Court.
Right.
So you, in fact, effectively have two bites at the cherry after.
So just to be clear, you could, if you're refused by the TfL or the council for a taxi license, you could make an appeal to the magistrates' courts, which will be stage one of an appeal or part one. If they then refuse you, we're saying you can then go to the Crown Court and appeal there further.
But yes. And each hearing is what we call a de novo hearing, which means it's not strictly an appeal in the sense that you're saying the decision before was wrong. It's a rehearing. They start from the beginning.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? And you see, most appeals, or I say most appeals, I can't even say that most appeals in law, but, you know, sometimes you have to have new evidence to present in order to say, look, this wasn't actually considered in the first place when the decision was made. And here's some more evidence or information that's come to light that's really key. And I'm appealing for you to consider this whole thing and encompass these points in it as well.
Yeah, what we're used to in the media is seeing trials that have been conducted by jury. And
yes.
To appeal a trial by jury, you then have to have either a point of law or some new evidence that wasn't available at the time. You can't simply say they made the wrong decision. That's the whole point of the jury trial process.
Within
the magistrate's court process, it's a court designed by statute. Now, that means that it's everything it does is ruled by the Magistrates' Courts Act.
No jury exists in a magistrate's court, just so to clarify that for our listeners.
So either lay magistrates, that is volunteers who are trained, or a district judge, and their decisions can be appealed as of right. That means you don't have to have a reason to appeal it. You can simply appeal because it's your right to.
Yes.
And then go to the Crown Court, and the Crown Court appeal process is normally one Crown Court judge with two lay magistrates. And then the three of them will make a fresh determination.
I like that. Fresh determination. I like that term. It feels cuddly. It feels nice. A fresh determination. Well, hopefully it will go in the way that you want it to go. But you know,
hopefully the only thing, big warning sign on that is that they can also obviously come the decisions that are worse than where you were in the magistrates' court.
Yes, yes.
For example, if they find that you are still guilty or that you're still not entitled to a license, you could end up with increased costs. You may even, on a criminal conviction, you could end up with a more serious sentence within certain parameters. So it isn't risk-free, but
yes, it's an option if you
people feel that it's beneficial to have a second chance, perhaps better presented, their case is better presented, or they feel they're getting a more fair hearing in the Crown Court from the magistrates court, because you have more senior lawyers involved, and often you have, obviously, you've got a Crown Court judge involved who's theoretically is more accomplished and more senior than you would get in the magistrates court.
Wonderful. Jeremy, that's all we have time for today. We have gone over time, but that's quite all right, because I know that we were talking about some really interesting key things, and actually it's not so straightforward. You know, there are lots of elements to even one or two of the points that we were discussing. So in part three, I would like to, as I said, drill down a little bit more into those, simplify them even more. But the first thing I'd like to do is thank you so much for joining me for a part two.
Pleasure. I look forward to part three.
Indeed, indeed. And what I will say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Gets Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getslegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes.